Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and thank you so much for taking the time to download and listen to us. Every week, we strive to bring you an interesting individual in the world of sports medicine and human performance, and sometimes general health as well. And today is no exception. We are very excited to have Mr. Howard Gray with us today. Welcome to the podcast, Howard.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. I'm going to tell the audience a little bit about who you are. And why you're here, and we'll just jump off into the conversation.
Sounds good.
So Howard is the Assistant Athletic Director of Sports Science at Texas A&M. He works in our athletics department. We're going to talk a lot about what that means in a few minutes and how that's an ongoing and up-and-coming field, really, in athletics. A little bit about Howard's background. He graduated with a bachelor's degree in sport and recreation management from the University of Maine at Machias in Machias, Maine. Well, he got his master's degree at East Tennessee State University in exercise physiology and performance, worked with the famous Stones there, and started working on a PhD and still working on it.
Yeah, it takes time.
That's right. Well, you know, a job with money came along, right?
Yes, it did. Two of them, actually, but we'll get to that.
Two of them came. He's got quite a bit of experience. He was the women's soccer assistant coach and personal trainer at the University of Maine at Machias. He was a graduate assistant in men's soccer assistant coach at East Tennessee State University. He was intern strength and conditioning coach with the Reading Football Club in the UK, strength and conditioning coach at Crystal Palace Football Club in the UK. He is assistant strength and speed coach at Florida State University and now the assistant athletic director here at A&M for sports science. And so tell us a little bit about the assistant director, athletic director for sports science. People are used to athletic trainers. They're used to coaches. They're used to all other things. But this idea of something involved with sports science, what is that in athletics?
I think at the collegiate level, what's new is the title.
Okay.
And a designated role for it.
Okay.
Athletic trainers, strength and conditioning coaches, and people in between have been doing sports science. You know, you guys, you know, and academics that are there as resources for everyone on campus.
Yeah.
You guys have been doing sports science for a long time,
right,
in different areas, but it may not have been your primary role,
right,
to operate as a full-time sports scientist supporting, primarily in my case, football, but then other athletes in the athletic department as well and other teams. So I think really just that designated role is what's emerging. And then that does allow you to then delve deeper, you know, do a more, you know, more effective job, you know, communicate with the right people, you know, problem solve, and act as a resource, as well as doing day-to-day operations that help the team, you know. So I think it's just that it's more specific now. It's, you know, it's a specific role.
Mm-hmm.
And we are lucky, you know, at Texas A&M that we are a large department. We've got, you know, a large university, and we're able to, you know, make those investments in human resources, but then also in technology and equipment. But I will always, you know, people that say sports science is new to the U.S., I think that they're doing, you know, like I said, aforementioned strength and conditioning coaches, athletic trainers, and academic folk a disservice by saying that, you know, it's been going on a long time, just now that it can be a little bit more focused now that we do have point people.
But it's your position really, though, I think, as compared to those other ones, mm-hmm. really involves the analysis and the collection and analysis of a large amount of data that scientists haven't been involved with. I know in my past undergraduate world, the biggest amount of data or the analysis was like the biomechanic analysis of punting and throwing and things like that. And you take the video or the film at that time and you'd break it down and so forth. But that really has evolved as something completely different now.
Well, it's the fact that we're just linked with the day-to-day practice, you know, and it's not that, oh, this is a study. I mean, when I first got here, people were like, oh, yeah, how long are you here for? You know, how long is the study? You have your experiment, and it's like, that's not really what's going on. This is ongoing, you know, we're always in a data collection period, always evaluating as we go. It's not like, oh, we're going to do 16 weeks here and then you know, break into two groups or three groups and give them, you know, we're just assessing what's going on and looking for patterns. That does mean that sometimes it's hard to find, you know, hard and fast facts and findings. You know, it's not like rats in a in a cage and you're giving, you know, supplements to one and nothing to the other, or a placebo. You know, it's not like that.
Right.
So it's you know, sometimes the findings are kind of more general, you know, and to help guide us.
I mean, you're really collecting data to inform performance.
Exactly.
To make performance better, as opposed to finding some research.
Exactly.
Some research goal.
And we'll always refer to the literature, and the literature is important. And, and the fact that we're that's part of our role too, is that, you know, is our head coach going to have the time or expertise to be able to go dig deep into the literature
interest.
To find something? Yeah.
Right.
Most of the time they'll have some interest. It's just, you know, they don't know where to go. They don't have the time. And that's not, you know, they wouldn't know what's good between a good research paper and a bad research paper.
Right.
From a methods standpoint, so we're there. You know, we definitely refer to, you know, some of the basic sciences and then some of the literature in our area, everything from, you know, exercise physiology all the way through to some of the really specific sports science stuff that's out now, as well as obviously book. And keep an eye on some of the stuff that gets touted on social media. It's usually a lot of rubbish out there, but it also does it does kind of raise your awareness to some stuff and some newer stuff too, that's out there. To say that, you know, we're always, it's effectively in a data collection period, and first and foremost, and Dr. Stone, this is a quote from Mike Stone, first rule is to be a good scientist.
Mm.
So are we creating research papers after research papers and abstracts come from what we're doing? No, we're not. We may be able to do some of that in the future with, you know, your assistance, but that data needs to be as good a quality as you can get it. You know, and I'm big on that. That's something that maybe hasn't been able to be possible, you know, back in the day, you know, when it's your strength coach splitting time between about five different roles is also collecting some information, you know, maybe timing of it is inconsistent or the methods that you've done are a little inconsistent. I feel confident with everything that we've done here that our data is very good. You know, any bad data has been weeded out or we found alternatives, so that we can look back.
Right. Right.
And we don't have that in the back of our mind. Oh, this looks like a trend here, but it's only a slight trend. But how back then? How did we do this again? Oh,
right.
Wait, no, we got on a record and we've been very consistent. So,
that's important. And along that line, though, the amount of stuff that is being monitored now because of technology is so much greater.
Yeah.
Than in the past. Like you said, in the past you could monitor how much somebody lifted, how many times, maybe how fast they ran a certain distance. But now you're monitoring how much people run during practice.
Oh yeah. That's one that is done, you know, with coming up to 70 of our athletes now with football. You know, eventually we'd like that to be 85, you know, because we're making investments, significant investments with a scholarship and all the support that goes around that with 85 of our athletes. So we're close. But, yeah, everyone there that's tracked with Catapult, which is our choice of athlete monitoring tool. There are others. It's not just Catapult.
And for the audience that doesn't know, so a Catapult and those kind of tools, they're – a device that they wear.
Yep. Yeah, it's a device within that you put in a garment. Yeah, that is kind of between the shoulder blades, a little higher than that, but you know, on their back. So anything the athlete does, the monitor does as well, you know, so that it knows kind of the orientation, the direction you're going, not just the speed. You know, obviously, going backwards 10 miles an hour is very different than going forwards 10 miles an hour in every regard.
Yeah.
So lateral movement and change of the direction. But it's essentially GPS and accelerometer, the two main things in there. There's some other stuff too, but the GPS in there is 10 hertz, so 10 times a second. You know, it's picking up position, the person's position on this, the face of this planet, and, you know, obviously doing all the calculations, everything to then work out speed, distance run, you know, distance moved at certain speeds, accelerations, decelerations, and then the accelerometer is 100 hertz, so 100 times a second. We're picking up that information, which is great when you're indoors. We are lucky with our indoor facility here. The roof is a kind of coated PVC, which lets this signal through. There are not very many.
And when it was built, people didn't know that.
No. So when those facility guys, if they want to change that facility, I'm going to, you know, interject there. I don't have anything to do with facilities, but that would be the one that I would be like, hey, you know, something similar to what we've had before would be great as far as a roof. That's rare. I know the Miami Dolphins have a similar setup, and I think there's a couple of others.
Yeah.
But most, you know, it was a Florida State loss, and it was a huge headache. Because you'd have indoor reports, then outdoor reports. But then the worst case scenario is you start outside, and then thunderstorm comes 3:30 Tallahassee, Florida every afternoon in August and September, and you move inside.
Yeah.
And then there's an adjustment period moving inside. I think ultimately in the next 5 years, well, less than 5 years, I know they're working on it now. It takes time from a reliability and validity standpoint to get it right. But they will have a system that's interchangeable indoor outdoor. But long story short, right now we don't have that problem. Occasionally, if we have a really overcast day and say D-line are working along one of the walls, you might get one drop out for a period of time. But other than that, we're good.
Now, the audience may not realize this, but a lot of the athletes in sports competitions right now are already wearing these devices. I was watching the Gold Cup recently in one of the Mexico games, and you can see if you look at the back of the Mexican players, they got the little hump on their back, a little bit below their neck, up above their shoulder blade, and that's they're wearing some type of system that tracks them. So this is happening in competitions already.
Yeah, people are like, oh, you wear, what about games? And it's like, well, games is easier than ever because they're wearing their pads, and it's in their pads. I mean, it adds a couple grams to their, but doesn't make a difference effectively, and it's in there and it's safe in their pads. And the way that we've got a good system with how it is in the pads, very secure. We've kind of, knock on wood, we've never lost one, never lost one, period, in 3 years, and one has not popped out in a game. We've had a heart rate monitor or two come off in games. We don't require them to wear them, the heart rate monitors, in games because they are a little bit more, I don't know if invasive is the right word, but a little less comfortable.
Yeah.
They're, it's obvious that they're, you know, to them and to everyone that they're wearing those. But yeah, the units are in there. Any of the padded practices, it's a similar deal. You know, they're just in their pads. And then when they're in an unpadded practice, you know, like day before a game or a couple of days before the game or a Monday or in conditioning, like we're doing a lot of right now, you know, they're wearing a compression garment.
So this is fine with the sanctioning bodies. They have no problem. They have no problem with you guys monitoring.
Yeah, there's the NCAA and actually the SEC has their own rules as well. And they're a little, to be honest, they're a little bit vague because, you know, they're a little bit behind the technology. And that's fine. You know, we don't push that. you know, there's a little bit of some question marks with regards to live monitoring, you know, like seeing the data come in during a game.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not going to say that we never have interest in doing that.
Right.
But at this point, I think you're better off planning well.
Yeah.
And then analyzing well.
Right.
And then that influences the next planning period, whether it's planning for the next practice, or the next week, or the next phase, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Live, I think the coaches have enough to deal with. During the game, peering over a computer screen or an iPad and looking at that, you know, it might help with one or two cases physically and be like, hey, look at this guy's heart rate sky high. You know, that's definitely something we could look at. You know, he hasn't done that much. What's going on? You know, is it dehydration or something else going on? He's having a panic attack out there or whatever. But other than that, I think it's not going to help too much with performance.
But you bring up an interesting role of this, and that is safety of the participants.
Yeah, and that's the angle that you would definitely go from a live standpoint.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't come up very often, but it is kind of that what if scenario. And maybe there is a way that we can kind of do it just purely for that and it not be a distraction.
Well, so. In the news recently, there have been reports of, like, especially because soccer now is starting up in Europe in particular, there's been some soccer incidents where you have supposedly players that are well-trained that collapse on the pitch because of heart attacks or whatever. And so certainly having this kind of monitoring in place, you may be able to see that coming.
And live in practice is a lot more common, and something that we've done and will continue to do is going live in practice. That's a different deal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so worried about, okay, distracting a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator from his main role, during practice. You know, it can be a distraction during practice, but we generally do it in a way that it's, hey, let's plan really well. Let's not panic here. We may have a couple guys that for that day are coming back from injury, or they're very guy that we lean on heavily all season, and they'd like to practice hard. Practicing hard is great, but then we may also have a rough kind of a guideline for them where we don't want them to go too far above.
Right.
So we can update, you know, coaches on how their progress is towards that. You know, we don't want to get to the point where we have to start pulling players from practice because, again, that messes everything.
Right.
I used to work in soccer, and that was less of a deal because you can just rotate someone else in. But you do that with this sport, it changes everyone's roles for each play, and it screws everything up, you know. So that's something that we really don't want to do. Again, it's best to, you know, analyze and communicate that data well and plan well.
Yeah.
So that that kind of situation happens a lot less.
So how have you found that the coaches have adapted to this? The reason I ask, several years back we were working with a team with some data analysis stuff, and after one of the particular coaches left, the whole team stopped doing it because, as the head coach said, we don't have time to deal with this. We don't have time to look at this and so forth. So what's your experience been with coaches as far as handling all this information?
I think it varies.
Yeah.
And the way I look at, again, I'll go back to a soccer example. In soccer, you're going to have a head coach and you're going to have two, three assistants. You might have a goalkeeper coach that's supplementary to a strength and conditioning coach, but it's a pretty small staff, and it's clear – you got the head coach, and then the others are assistants.
Yeah.
Here, it really, all of the assistant coaches effectively are head coaches of their position. They really are, because they do a lot on their own, and then obviously they come together for team periods and stuff. But they do a lot on their own. They have autonomy over their players as far as everything. You know, okay, Coach Sumlin needs to know what's going on. But as far as all of the details, right. You can't keep track of 100. We got 118 guys training right now. As well with media and direction of the program, et cetera, et cetera. It's obvious. I don't think I'm telling you anything you don't know, but some people skim over that. And so everyone is their own head coach. They're really working with 9, 10 head coaches.
Right.
And they have assistants too, quality control, et cetera. So everyone deals with it a little differently. Some people want more detail. Some people just want the general gist. Some people just want, hey, just tell me if something really crazy is going on. And that's absolutely fine. I think pushing too much. I try to give a little less and then just enough to create conversations. And if we see a red flag, and there are a couple other areas, nutrition is seeing something too with their body weight or body weight loss, and athletic trainers are noticing some things too, they're probably noticing it too, the coach. Mm. And when you got all of those areas lining up, that's when it's like, okay, let's have a conversation. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to do anything drastic, but let's have a conversation. It could be something that's happening away from the field, away from football.
Right.
That's where sports science is in all areas, mm-hmm. And it's happening. It's happening with the coaches too. It's part of their life now. I think if we took it away from them right now, even ones that don't lean so heavily on it, I think they would miss it.
Yeah.
There are multiple ways that it can benefit you. Like right now, the big thing we've been pushing is consistency during the summer. It's not like going if you got 8 reps of a sprint drill. What you see, if you put it on people and they don't know that they've got it on them, guarantee you their first rep and their last rep will be the fastest.
Mm.
But then what's going on in between?
Right.
It's consistency there is important. Okay, rep to rep. If you take rep 3 off, or you take, we were planning on doing 8, but guess what? There are two get added.
Right.
Guess what? Rep 9. Yeah. How's rep 9 going to be?
Right.
Is it going to be really good? Guys like, let's get this right, or is it going to be bad because people are mentally kind of surprised by it and it kind of brings them down. So that's something we've been pushing is consistency, kind of look at variation rep to rep of the speeds that they're reaching and the performance within the rep, within the workout. So it's not just, okay, this guy ran X amount at this speed. It's, okay, how was he in each rep? How is he handling adversity?
Right.
How's he handling over the heat? How's he handling, coaches weren't there, now they're there this day, and challenging these players. How is he handling that? So we can get to know the player and say that situation where rep 9 was poor and all the others are good. That might be like, oh, yeah, well, one out of 10 being bad is not bad. But guess what? In the game of football, that could be a first down that you really need.
Right.
That receiver did not run the route like he could. And the quarterback threw it 2 yards in front of him.
Right.
And that's big. Or it could be a big play, giving up a big play on defense rather than, that third down where we could get a stop here. It's 3rd and 9 and hey, they get out of jail, So that consistency has been a big thing.
So one of the things that we talk about on this podcast quite a bit, we ask our guests kind of how they got to where they are. And this, I think, really important. We have a lot of people that listen to this podcast who are younger in their career. And you seem to be kind of on the leading edge of a new wave that's coming in athletics. So, number one, how have you gotten here? Have you always been interested in this, or is this? What advice would you give people that are maybe listening that say, I'm really interested in this data analytics part of the sports world?
Sure. Well, I really started out with interest in strength and conditioning. I was a mediocre athlete until I started training myself. It was doing my A levels, which are like the last 2 years of high school in England. I got to a university. We used to go there once a week, I think, with one course, sports studies course that we were doing. And I started reading journals, NSCA journals, National Strength and Conditioning Association journals back in the day. They were all beaten up, weathered paper copies. this is about 99, 2000. So that's where I started really training myself, and internet was starting to take off a little bit, so I could read a lot more access. So there's a lot of bad stuff that I did training-wise, some really bad stuff.
We've all done that.
Oh, my God. But I didn't have the opportunity to study an undergrad because I was coming from the UK and I just needed a scholarship, to be completely honest. So
is that how you wound up at Maine?
Yeah. I actually played basketball and soccer there. A lot of people don't realize that. I came over initially to play basketball and I did both sports for 2 years and my body broke down. So I only did 2 years
for the listeners,
of basketball.
If you haven't looked up University of Maine and Machias, you should.
Yeah, Machias is a tiny little place.
Okay, I've been mispronouncing.
Yeah, that's okay. It's about 1,100 students, and their athletic department's pretty much falling apart now. But we had a good team, a lot of internationals. The scholarship situation was really good. It was NAIA, so less rules, basically. I don't want to put them under and get them in trouble from them getting investigated, but they're not part of the NAIA anymore. So, but yeah, they had a lot of internationals there. So I I just did what I could with that degree. It was basically sport management.
It was your opportunity.
Yeah. And I dabbled with psychology as well. I thought about changing my major, but I'm glad I stuck with what I did because I was able to do some prereqs and be able to get into an exercise physiology master's program. Mm-hmm. Lucky enough to be with the Stones there the first time around. And I was assistant coach, GA doing a little bit of everything. It's a smaller Division I program, so you kind of have a lot of dual roles there. And that's kind of where I went from being an assistant coach with a strength and conditioning background to being a strength and conditioning coach with a football background, soccer background. Mm-hmm. So it, just a slight shift, and I knew that I kind of needed to go home to really learn. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky to get with a very experienced practitioner. Now he doesn't work with the team now. He actually works with FIFA and another of big organizations, but Kuli Odetoyembo. He was with Reading Football Club at that time. I was an intern strength and conditioning coach there with him. Learned a lot more about on-field sports science. That's when we were doing a lot of heart rate monitoring. GPS was just coming out. This was 2008.
Yes, that was only 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's what people listening should understand. That was only 10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah.
And that was the beginning of
We had some GPS units that I think were 1 hertz, I think. So 1 times a second. So imagine you're doing like a zigzag drill or cutting left and right, and it's only taking your position 1 second. You know, you're going to miss a lot of important information in there.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really accelerometer in there. It was very preliminary stuff for us. Australia were ahead of the UK at that point. They were doing some better things down there with rugby and Australian rules football. The UK has definitely caught up since then. They're doing a pretty good job right now. He realized this wasn't going to be for forever. My internship was kind of extended, but then he helped me get my first real full-time job was with Crystal Palace Football Club, full-time, you know, heading up things with the academy, sports science and strength and conditioning. So that's why I'm saying strength and conditioning coaches have been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I was a dual role there doing a bit of both, you know, had an intern and they had some financial problems as a team. While I was there, welcome to the world of professional sports, especially in the UK. The pro teams over here, major league teams over here, don't tend to fold as quickly as they can in the UK. But they had some problems. A lot of people got let go. And I was kind of like, you know what? I feel like I'm doing a good job, but you know, I want to further my education. You know, I had only had a master's degree. I didn't have the underground grad. So I was really only 2 years of ex-phys really into a true education in the field. So, you know, came back and worked with Dr. Stone and Meg again at East Tennessee State and did a bunch of things work-wise with them. Was back with the old soccer team that I was before, and this time it was purely as a strength conditioning coach, sports scientist, not as an assistant coach, and that was great. They already had that relationship, and that's a huge thing. That'll be one of my take-homes later. The relationship is there, and we were able to achieve a lot of good things at the mid-major level, go to the NCAA tournament, you know, win. We won seven out. We went 8 games into overtime, and we won 7 of them.
Wow.
You know, and during my time there and good second half of the seasons, finishing games and stuff like that. So it was a good experience and kind of 2/3 of the way through, you know, I'm doing my studies and Florida State came calling. So I went to do a similar job there as a strength and conditioning coach, had swimming and diving as well, and then was just about to buy a house there. And then Texas A&M came calling in 2014. So and this was my first job where I haven't coached. So
there's no strength and conditioning. Nope. It's all the data collection analysis.
Yep.
And we
like to be there and around because there's so much contextual stuff here. If you just literally sat in your office or you weren't even in the facility and just saw the data stream in, you'd be like, oh, this guy's having a bad day. Well, were you not there? Did you not see?
Right.
You know what I mean? He was sick or this wasn't happening or readjusted it because of this or, you know, the contextual information is huge and record keeping of that is probably one of our biggest challenges. And I feel we've done a good job from day one, but we're better than ever at that.
And I'll tell the audience that your office does look out on the training facility.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, that helps. So I'm trying to paint a picture here that I'm traveling, you know, half a mile in for every lift. No, it's right there. And that helps. It's tough sometimes when you are trying to get some big jobs done and the weight room's going and the music's blaring, but it's a great atmosphere, you know, and dealt with some good coaches and the athletes. You know, if you come in and you don't have that much energy that day for whatever reason, you know, and those guys will bring you up, those players.
Yeah.
It's great to be around.
Yeah.
First time not coaching, definitely an adjustment. I think it's the right thing. It was the right progression in my career. I wasn't that good at coaching anyways, as far as a coach's eye and that natural gift that the best coaches have, I didn't have. And I'm, you know, I could try to do my best in those areas, but, you know, I never had that. Things came naturally to me through my own training. So moving away from that wasn't too hard. Right. An adjustment at first.
But you're not that far away, though.
No, exactly.
You're 10 feet away, and you're looking at it from a different perspective.
Well, and what's coaching and what's not coaching? You know what I mean? Right. The fact we're around the athletes, we're helping coaches coach.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? So it's not right. it's a stone's throw away. Right. It's, you know, we physically can't instruct them through, but we can be right there. Right. So, yeah, it wasn't too hard of an adjustment.
Yeah. Howard, I have to tell you thank you today.
Oh, it's no been problem great, at all. Great, is that half an hour? Is that the time?
That's
right
the
there.
Time.
Oh,
my. Yeah, we've gone through pretty quickly. Great. And as our regular listeners know, this is a time we give our guests the opportunity for a take-home message. What's the one thing you want the audience to remember from this podcast?
Can I do two?
Sure.
If you're kind of new to this field or new to a team, definitely learn to ask questions and build those relationships first.
Mm-hmm.
You might have an opinion over something, but that you want to push to the front, the top of the agenda. But build those relationships first. Try to find out what they need and what they could do with help with. And then the other one is really kind of continually be in a process of zooming in and zooming out. The details matter, collection of data, all of that kind of stuff. Where we need to be good scientists. Those matter. Those details matter. But you can't lose track of the big picture. If you're always focused on those minute details, you may lose track of, hey, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to help this team win.
Yeah.
So zoom out, zoom in, zoom out, zoom in every single day, multiple times.
Great take home messages. Thank you again for being with us.
You're welcome.
It's been great to have you here.
Thanks, guys.
And thanks so much for all of you that are listening and taking the time to download us and listen. As you know, this is the time of the podcast when we always have our podcast question of the week. And here with that podcast question of the week is our producer, Carlos.
What positive effect does our football indoor facility have here at Texas A&M for Howard Gray and his team?
Great question, Carlos. Be the first person to send us by email the right answer to that question, and you'll win one of those nifty podcast T-shirts that we have. That email address is huffines@tamu.edu. Again, be the first one to send that email over, and sometimes we actually get more than one, so don't hesitate to send us an email if you think you've got the right answer. Again, thank you all for taking the time to be with us. Thank you, Howard, for being with us as well.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
And we will look forward to seeing all you folks in the next week. Until then, we hope that you stay active and healthy.
The executive producer of the Sports Medicine Podcast is Kenneth McIntyre. This podcast is licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffines@tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.